Hello, and welcome to episode 125 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and as always, I'm joined by the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the creator of the upcoming martial arts epic, Cockney Kung Fu, it's Tony Esmond.
You right?
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, you expect me to go, Bisto, due to a conversation we just had.
Yeah. It's a conversation that our lovely listeners will have to wait until the end of the show to know what we're talking about. But I'm sure our Bisto is something that you say all the time, Tony.
I got a flask today because I'm not at work tomorrow, so I can go as long as I like.
Oh, nice. Lovely. Mm. Speaking of Bisto, you're a vegetarian. Can you not have Bisto?
Some Bisto is vegetarian, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah, some gravy you can get is vegetarian, yeah.
The watery ones.
You get veggie crazy gravy.
Yeah.
Veggie crazy.
Crazy for veggie gravy.
Yes, it's going to be one of those weeks, folks, because we don't have any guests. So, you know, we're doing
no
what
one
we
will
want.
Come on.
Yeah, no. No one. I don't
think like
because we'll be inundated. Yeah, we have plenty of guests lined up for future shows. Don't worry. But also, I know you lovely people sometimes like listening to all three of us just rant at each other. For a couple of hours. Yeah, so it's always nice.
Yeah.
Tell you what else is also nice. Our sponsors. The lovely folks at Comic House, Pete and the Comic House gang. They are the sponsors. They help keep the lights on. And also they're doing amazing stuff in the name of small press comics and independent publishing at the moment. If you go to comichouse.com, you'll see the likes of all kinds of awesome comics that you can buy directly from there, such as our favourite Periwinkle.
Yeah,
which is front and centre on the featured indie comics, along with Brain Shoodles, and a series called Toy... It says Toy Z, but I'm guessing it's Toys.
Okay, is that after the Robin Williams movie?
Oh. Too soon.
Is it World War Z and Toys?
The same.
I think it's exactly that, Dan. It looks like Toy Story mixed with World War Z. Well done, Dan.
There you go. That's our idea, don't nick it.
Yeah. Well, I think someone's already done it, Tony. Anyway, so you've got all these brilliant featured comics on there. And not only that, but they put together an amazing anthology they're putting out, I think bi-monthly now, that Dan Butcher and myself have taken part in, as well as a whole heap of amazing creators. You can get that from the website. Plus, they're exciting times. This coming week, the app will be releasing, won't it, lads?
Yeah. As you listen to this, isn't it tomorrow?
I believe it is. I think so. Yeah. So
that's come around quick, isn't it?
It has. It has. Probably the Comic House guys have probably been snowed under with this for so long. I bet they're bricking it. But
I've got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Use the app.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
I think we're going to get a lot more people jumping on it once it's out there.
Yeah.
As well. As in people uploading their comics.
Yeah. And it's word of mouth, isn't it, really? And if it's as cracking as it seems, then it's just going to get bigger and better. And there's just
people are like, they wait to see how it goes, don't they, before they...
Yeah.
I know some people have got, you know, looked at the beta of the app, and they're really surprised at the amount of comics that are on there already. So it's not like they've started something up and they've only got six issues. There's quite a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, they're game ready, aren't they, I think, definitely.
I've left a couple of reviews already.
Look at you.
We'll get the ball rolling.
Look at you, Dan. Have you ever reviewed this show?
No.
I feel like it show up that it's us writing it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm going to find a whole new computer.
Yeah.
4 out of 5 stars.
Yeah. but if you haven't listened to the show before, the app is basically it's like Netflix for comics. So you sign up for about £3 a month. You get access to the whole library that are on the Comic House app.
It's actually better than Netflix for comics because you can download every single title. It won't selectively ask you to read them online. You can download them all.
Oh, that's good.
And they probably don't have that horrible thing like on Netflix when all you want to do is just hover over something and add it to the list and it starts playing it, or play some horrible stock music over the top.
Yeah.
Right, that happened when I was watching Zombies versus MILFs the other day in Costa. Anyway, you sent me a video of a man's willy and I was sat in Costa watching it.
No, I never.
Yeah, you did.
That was the painted thing. Yeah.
Mm.
Now, it wasn't for shits and giggles. Let's finish this sponsorship segment, and then I'll clear this up. Because not only is the app awesome, and you can find out more at comichouse.com/app, but we've also got a cheeky bit of a competition, which we ran last week.
Yes.
Yes, you lovely listeners can win a 12-month subscription to Comic House to check out this lovely stuff. And all you have to do is answer a simple question or impress us with an answer. Tony, do you
want to... We want you to tell us why small press comics are great. It can be done in the form of something that is written. We've had a couple of, let's call them very interesting answers recently.
Well, or it can be in the form...
Or it can be in the form of art. It can be in the form of a video. If you want to send us a video of you in the bath or something like that, that'd be nice. Or it can be in the form of mime or... anything you like, really. So send it to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. There you go. I actually remembered my own email.
Oh, nice one.
Blimey. That may be the first time you've ever said it on the show as well.
I think it is.
We've only got until episode 125 for you to remember your bloody email. Yes, but yeah, take part, folks, because it's seriously, it's something you're not going to want to miss. And we are going to have the fine folks at Comic House on this show in the near future.
Yes.
So stay tuned.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting times indeed. And it's
I think this is going to be a bit of a... People are going to remember when this happened, I think. I get the sense of that at the moment.
Yeah.
At the start of it, I thought, that's a good idea. And then slowly it sort of built and built and built. And I've got to the point now where, having seen it, I'm like recommending it. I recommended it to quite a well-known creator today. Mm. And recommending it to people, saying, "This is, you want to jump on this now, I'll tell you now."
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you really
and
do.
I'll tell you what, I've heard of a few people, whether it was on messages on Facebook or whatever, saying that like they've heard about this stuff and Comic House from the show and checked it out, and that's brilliant because that's exactly what this show's all about. And we're all about trying to get independent comics in your hands and smashed into your eyes.
I would like to propose a feature. We can talk about it off air, but the like a Comic House spotlight, and then once week per show, we'll pick out a title and we'll read it, and then give our feedback.
Yeah, and if maybe everyone could write in, tell us what they think of it as well. It'd be nice. Yeah, like all that, don't they?
Maybe tie into like the reader group that they were running on the ACP.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, we've done that for a couple of months.
We know if everyone's got the app, everyone's got the same access to the same comic.
Yeah. You don't have to have the app to be one of our friends. I'd like to point that out. But yeah, it is worth getting, I think, is a way to put it, isn't it? Yeah, we're all inclusive, so you know, some people.
Yeah, going back to the video we had before, sometimes I listen back to like a really old show and we talk about stuff at the beginning. I was like, no fucking idea what we were talking about then. And we got to kind of clear this up with this kind of Willy video, because I'd be listening thinking, what the fuck are they talking about?
I was sat in Costa and this video came through, and it was, you know, you get the preview image, don't you? This one happened to be just a black screen on my phone. It was like... Yeah, I think this is quite interesting. And
let's make it clear. My good friend and past guest Dan Chance sent me this video, and it's about Jim Carrey, or Carrey, however you want to say it, describing his love of art and why he does art. And it comes across, you know, it's very sort of pretentious in the way he's talking about it. And then it cuts to a man painting a portrait of two people with his meat and two veg.
It's actually not bad. It's actually...
Yeah, it's all right.
There's a few comic creators out there who could pay attention to how good that was. Tell you.
So,
if he can paint that well with his hands, I imagine he's pretty good with his knob. I guess he's pretty good painting with his hands.
Yeah.
Maybe we should give that a go.
Yeah.
I hope he gives it a good clean afterwards, because you wouldn't want that.
Yeah. Imagine that. But, you know, would white spirit sting?
Yeah, imagine. God.
Well, hopefully he's not using gloss. Fucking hell.
Oh dear. Do you reckon...
I wonder what extra colours he adds to it as he goes along.
Do you reckon he creosotes his garden fence with it?
He could get different effects depending on the tumescence of his member.
Wonder if he's Jackson Pollock and thought, I'm not going to do that, you know.
Yeah. Jackson Pollock. Yeah, Pollock.
That'd be a good stage name for him.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if you ring Vince on 07737 498 783, he'll send you the video as well.
Oh, dear.
I get that number up. Don't ring that number. It's probably somebody who lives somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get so many WhatsApp messages from people, like, and they send me a message and I'm like, right, I've fucking got to look around before I click on this because I know it's going to be something dodgy. But rarely the Vince or Tony ever send those ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is surprising to everyone. Yeah. I suspect. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. There was a bit of genital humour, and I immediately thought of Dan and Tony.
I got a laugh. The bit at the beginning did catch me off guard. I was like, I wonder why he sent me this for Jim Carrey. And then now, yeah. There's a flaccid knob being used as a paintbrush. There we go.
And it all made sense.
We'd like to point out that other genitalia is available.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. However you want to do your art is all good with us, because it's about expressing yourself.
You could use that as a way of entering the competition.
Yes, if you enter the competition using your genitals to make a piece of art, you stood a good chance of winning, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can have my subscription. Oh, God. Please, please, people, don't do that.
Please don't.
Yeah. We do not advise it. Oh, I'm glad we cleared that up, though.
Yeah, I'm glad we sorted that out, yeah. Oh. And didn't ruin your good name.
Look, after 125 weeks of this, my name has been ruined enough. Absolutely ruined enough. But yeah, it's been it's an exciting time for comics and comics media at the moment.
Yes.
Tony's been a busy boy, as he always is.
Yeah.
Because, firstly, you went to the cinema today, didn't you, Tony?
Yep, I went to the cinema, and I've also spent 13 hours in front of my iPad. Mm. So, went to the cinema today and saw Justice League, which I appreciate loads of people haven't seen, so I shan't be reviewing.
Yeah.
But make your own mind up, folks. I think that's the answer with movies these days. Yeah. Make your own mind up.
Is the release thing like the same way as it is with the Marvel ones? We get it a week before.
No, everyone gets it at the same time.
Everyone gets it at the same time. Okay.
Okay. Right.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to make all its money in the first week, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who thought we'd see a Justice League movie like that as well? With all those characters.
You know what? If this film would have come along about 3 or 4 years ago, I'd be fucking chomping at the bit. But, like, there's been so many superhero films now that I'm kind of, okay.
I can almost like one a month at the moment, yeah. Isn't it? You know, something to go see every month almost, yeah.
I mean, people complain about it. It's a fad. It will go, come and go. Mm.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be around for a little bit longer yet, but it... kind of
I find with a lot of the comic book genre in film and stuff, because it's been around so long and it's been so prolific, the easy criticisms, you know, they're easier to criticize now. I think this people are making that, you know, sometimes they criticize it just for the sake of criticizing it sometimes, I think, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. I mean, I can't, you know, it's Justice League on the big screen, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I know, I haven't even spoiled it for you two guys. I want you to both to watch it, and then we shall probably have a chat about it, I think. But what do you think?
And anyone who's listened to this show knows that all three of us, probably one of our favourite characters, if there was one unanimous favourite character I think we'd have, it would be Frank Castle, a.k.a. The Punisher.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty unanimous, isn't it? That he's one of the tops for all of us. And, of course, Netflix, the series has come out. Tony's absolutely rinsed it all.
Yeah, as have you.
I have as well. Dan has started it.
I'm 2 episodes in.
Yeah.
Far behind.
Yeah.
We were messaging each other, weren't we, Vince? Purposely without including Dan, because we didn't ruin anything.
Yeah.
But it was almost like we just literally were just sitting in a chair watching it for the whole 13 hours.
Yeah.
Because we were almost like keeping up with each other, weren't we? Going, oh, have you said this? What about this bit? And, like, you know.
Yeah.
Just didn't move, did we?
Yeah.
You
know? And I had to talk to someone about it. Like, some of the messages were just me going, holy fuck. Holy fuck.
I was just seeing that. Yeah.
Someone said on Twitter, I thought it was quite a good question, they weren't really familiar with The Punisher, and they said, what makes The Punisher kind of stand out from all those other people? What's special about The Punisher? If someone put that question to you, how would you answer it?
It's just, to me, it's just his, like, unflinching, completely practical, in the minute drive, and the fact that he will kill people. I like the fact he kills people. That's a weird thing to say, isn't it? But I just like the fact that whenever he just does it. There's no, like, you know, all this melodrama you get in movies about, oh, you're going to pull the trigger over, you know, like we laugh at, like, Seven, don't we? That moment at the end where he keeps lifting the gun up. It's Punisher just shoots him in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very black and white morality of the Punisher, isn't it? Yeah. It's kind of like there's a line completely, and like if you go over that, you're kind of fucked.
But he was based on the Executioner, wasn't he? I don't think Marvel ever don't admit this. He was based on Matt Nolan, by Don Pendleton, who's that kind of that character. You know, he's a little bit more adventure story. You know, ladies kind of. It's basically a men's adventure book series where he's obsessed with what kind of car he's driving and what kind of gun he's carrying. You know, and who he kills. And each book is basically a different sort of. A different like group of villains. You know, one week it'll be the Italian mafia, next week it'll be, you know, Russian spies, you know, it's that sort of thing. And they based it on that, and it worked, you know.
Yeah.
He was basically a sort of villain of the week almost in Spider-Man, villain of the month in Spider-Man. Was it 129, I think?
With the famous cover. Yeah,
Reece Fallin.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, for me, I mean, I've always been a fan of, not necessarily the vigilante story, but you know, when you just get an absolute sort of badass character. Who, you know, could just walk. You know, if you cross them, they're just going to wipe out or kick the ass of an entire like skyscraper full of people. You know, I love that kind of stuff. Whether it be, you know, you get the classics, you know, the Arnie film like Commando. You know, you got your John Wicks, your Equalizers. You know, that sort of story has been done so many times, but I love it every time.
I
love that character that, you know.
He's a Death Wish. He's Death Wish as well, isn't he?
Yeah. You usually find. The Punisher stories usually fall into three categories for me. There's a bit of nuance, but one would be like a straight adventure story when it's like say, Commando action film. One where kind of Frank is like a third character in the story, like it's centered around somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get that.
And the
lot,
Punisher's the big bad that kind of like shows up and does whatever. And the third one's usually when it's kind of like more introverted and how kind of messed up he is or how he's dealing with whatever's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, usually they're kind of, it's either told by Frank being just absolutely fucking on point doing what he's doing or being heavily conflicted. And I quite like both. Yeah. All three even.
And he's Batman, isn't he, for the Marvel, but with that, you know, he's going to get battered and
I mean,
he's been killed at least once, hasn't he? You know, I think.
Yeah.
They've done a couple of versions of him, haven't they? They've done a sort of alternative versions of him. I think they did Punisher 2099, didn't they, in the future?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if you remember this, but he turns up in the NAM, the comic series. The NAM.
Does he? That's interesting.
That used to be the backup strip for the UK reprints of the Punisher.
Oh, did it? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. And then in they did a Punisher Noir, didn't they? I think he's in the 20s, something like that.
Yeah.
1920s.
All of those Noir books were like that, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, and then they did in 1998, they did a series where he'd come back as a sort of he died and they resurrect him as a sort of angel of death kind of supernatural vigilante thing.
Fucking awful. Shit.
Which didn't really work. Yeah.
So somebody just doesn't understand what they've got.
Yeah, and a personal favourite of mine, I don't know if you've read this one, is Space Punisher. Have you read that?
No, I remember you saying about that. Is that where he's got a big ponytail?
Yeah, fucking brilliant. God. Oh, I love it. Yeah, yeah.
But Punisher 2099, we've mentioned it before, but that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
That's just like, Punisher to the nth degree. It's just fucking dialed up to 11.
Yeah, yeah. So we had an email in. Did you get an email, did you, Vince, was it?
It wasn't it, Aaron? Aaron on the was it the Twitter or the Facebook?
Oh, okay. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Aaron from Little Heroes, which you'll be hearing more about very soon.
Yeah,
he binge watched the series, much like us, loved it, but has never read a Punisher book before. So he wanted to know if there were any arcs or you know versions that we could recommend, which I think is a very Punisher's one of those characters, much like a Batman, I would say, that has had so many different takes on the character.
Yeah, he has, yeah. He's got a bit of a sort of freckled sort of publishing history, isn't he? He sort of comes out in various different versions, in various different series, and it's been restarted and launched again, and, you know. Yeah.
There's not too many characters that people can do that with, I think. People overlook that with the Punisher, I think, because he's seen as such a... So the character's almost seen black and white as well, isn't it? He seemed like, oh, right, he's just the guy that kills the bad guys. That's what he does. Certainly with some of the earlier reviews of the series I read, they almost dismissed the character as just being that, which is frustrating on another level. But there's so many different ways. I mean, like Tony said, there's been a Space Punisher, God's sake. Everything's better in space.
It is like very in your face stupid. Not stupid humorous, but just like there's a big wink. There's no continuity to that one, and it's written by Frank Tierian and art by Mark Texeira, and I love Tex's work.
He's great.
Really great. Yeah. He just goes around blowing up brood queens and all this sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. So in terms of what sort of Punisher arcs or storylines that have been, you know, that you've loved, that you think, because I think he's a character that does also have broad appeal. I think he's one of the rare ones that you can pop in, read an arc, and then leave again.
He
doesn't suffer too much from continuity bogged down, because he's also a character that if you're in the Punisher's life, it's not looking good for you, because you're not going to be there for very long. Something bad's
going to happen. Even Micro's not in it anymore, is he? You know, Microchip, as he's called in the comic. But yeah, I think because of the popularity we've got of Preacher at the moment, and because everyone's going back and reading Preacher trades, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, I think you've almost got to go with Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon's run on it.
God, yeah.
I think that's, you know, Welcome Back Frank.
Welcome Back Frank is,
you know, all that run of theirs. And they, you know, Steve Dillon is such a great loss to us. He's so brilliant.
Yeah.
Just telling a story, and Garth Ennis is brilliant. I think anything with Steve Dillon. So he did some work with Garth Ennis. He then did some work with Jason Aaron, which was very, very good as well. Which a lot of it was around the sort of bullseye relationship and how they sort of mirrored each other, you know. And then I know Becky Cloonan more recently has written some stories for him as well, which a little bit like Garth, watered down a tiny bit, but they still work quite well. They're a little bit more sort of strung out, a little bit more decompressed, but I enjoyed it, you know.
Mm.
I think just anything by it. If you open a Punisher comic and it's got Steve Dillon drawing it, I'd say go for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think anything, any arc from the Punisher Max series, which was Garth and Ennis with the likes of Garland,
if you get
Karloff,
that Welcome Back Frank, first one, if you like that, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
You're on board.
And I think Jonathan Mabry wrote quite a few of them as well. He understands the character, I think.
Punisher Max, that line was about 60 issues, wasn't it? Much like
Preacher. Yeah, and then it came back for a while, didn't it? It came back with the Jason Aaron one, I think.
Yeah, but there's so many, you know, you could, like the storylines, like the Slavers, which is such a dark...
Yeah, the Russ thing, yeah, really good.
Yeah, so dark. Yeah. But, I don't know, it has the most despicable bad guys of any comic. And you hate them, and they do horrible things that you wouldn't believe. And then, as was, you know, they get their just desserts, and it's usually not very pleasant.
I would also say, sorry, go on, Dan.
I was going to say the classic we talked about before is Punisher Circle of Blood.
Oh, yeah.
Artwork by Mike Zeck.
Stephen Grant writing that, is it?
Yes. And it's just a real great action comic, and it starts off with Punisher being imprisoned in Rikers Island, and him being a force of nature inside of Rikers. And there's the first issue is like prison riot. It's fucking brilliant, and the artwork and writing just fantastic. Really good. It's a real good adventure kind of Punisher story, that one.
You'll probably find quite a cheap sort of hardback of that if you look in back issue boxes and stuff like that, I would think. Yeah, I know. Before we begin, this is a Comixology sale on at the moment. So if anyone jumps on it, a lot of the ones we're mentioning are on the Comixology one. The sale there, I picked up a couple of sort of just to read in my iPad type ones. Yeah, it's well worth a look.
I'll be keeping an eye on that Platoon.
I'm
going to put that down on the wish list for Amazon. So when it comes out, I'll get it.
Yeah, so good. They released the cover to the third issue, didn't they? I sent it to you guys. Oh my god. Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, so good.
Another one to look out for was from the Punisher War Journal, which was... Punisher was so popular, he had two series at one point. He had the Punisher and Punisher War Journal. Now, War Journal, you should be able to get... I think you can get it on... as I can see here, on Amazon, you can get some paperbacks of it. Big collections. Carl Potts was doing it, and Jim Lee. Mike Baron wrote a bit of it as well.
Cool, I like Mike's work,
I think the War Journal collected one of my favourite storylines, which I was talking about just off the show, where there's a story involving Frank's old platoon. I mean, obviously in continuity these days it's probably all mixed up, but if it's a standalone story you want, I think it's about two or three issues involving Von Buren, the sniper, who was an amazing bad guy. And it's just a proper sort of action movie stuff with Jim Lee probably for my take was reaching the heights of his artwork chops.
Like, what you liked about him.
Because he did some scenes like a guy gets shot and he has flashbacks to Vietnam. Mm. And it's Jim Lee just drawing like full on like carnage in that's happening in Vietnam. Nice. Like there's a night battle that goes on that's just unbelievable. So good. So keep a look out for that. All of these ones I'll put in the show notes as well.
Yeah, obviously. I've got a couple more if you don't mind.
Go for it.
Born by Ennis and Derek Robinson.
God,
that's one of my favorites.
About his history in Nam. Just be great, really, really well done.
Yeah.
A couple that are a little bit out there. You've got the Marvel Universe versus the Punisher. By Goran, actually. Goran Parloff, written by Jonathan Mabry, we mentioned a minute ago. Mm. A plague has swept the earth, and everyone except Frank is a sadistic cannibal. So he has to take out the Hulk and Spider-Man and Doc Ock, sort of thing. And he's got rather than a sort of skull on his chest, he's got one of those sort of danger hazard chemical signs on his chest.
Oh,
that's quite cool. Frankencastle, which caused a little bit of controversy, but I absolutely loved it.
That's Remender, so Frank, isn't it? That's Rick
Remender. Yeah, Rick Remender. And Tony Moore, an artist. Gorgeous art. So Punisher dies, but is saved by the Legion of Monsters.
Didn't he get cut up by Wolverine, didn't he? Yeah, or something like that.
I think you're right, actually. Yeah, yeah. That rings a bell. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they make him sort of half man, half monster, and he looks great. Really, really good stuff. And the other one I wanted to mention was the... both in Punisher and Punisher Warzone. Do you know what? It's been restarted so many times. I lose track these days with Marvel. God bless them. But it's written by Greg Rucker. And some of my favourite bits are the Mark Cecchetto issues. And it's Frank. Part of it is Frank with the beard and the eye patch. And he's got also, there's a female sort of, it makes it sound shit, but it's not. It's actually quite good, where there's a sort of female who takes on the role as well.
Oh, yeah, she's really good.
She is. And when you think, oh, there'll be a female Punisher, everyone thinks, oh, that sounds a bit shit. Like, they just, you know, he's got a female sidekick or something. But it's not like that. They mirror his drive with her drive and how they compare and all this sort of thing. You know, her husband's been murdered and everything. But it's, really, really worth looking. And I think if you go on Amazon, you can get the hardback of the first arc cheaply. Mm. But it's also part of that Comixology sale as well. And that's really good. Rucker writes some great sort of spy, and it's another one when you say, Dan, about the concentrating on the other characters, so it kind of, which they do a trick in Punisher occasionally where they concentrate on the detectives.
Ennis did that a lot, didn't he? He treated Punisher as like a force of nature, and it's the people around him which make the universe more appealing, if you ask me.
Yeah, so it's a bit of that, and don't be put off by the fact that the one of the lead detectives looks exactly like the lead detective who's an actor in a famous movie, which he sort of pulled me out of it a little bit to start with, but you kind of get into it. But that's really good stuff.
That runs into one that really surprised me at how good it was, because I think that ended up with Punisher Warzone.
Yes, it did. Yeah, like it was a mini, wasn't it?
Which was basically the Avengers saying, look, this psychopath's done enough, we need to take him down. But it was very realistically done in the sense of, like, Frank Castle knows if Thor comes towards him wanting a fight, he doesn't stand a chance. So how does Punisher fight people like that?
But you see, Punisher gets round stuffed for me. Like, when you're reading this, there is a little bit of, you know, you take yourself out of reality by realizing that someone probably would just shoot Batman. No matter how many times he jumps around with his cape, somebody's going to shoot him in the head, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, and the Punisher sort of crosses that line because somebody will run at him and he'll just kill them.
Yeah.
You know, and you think, well, that was easy. Yeah. Or someone who doesn't lose their nerve when they're firing a gun, you know, sort of.
I would say
if you're going to avoid one, and this is only a personal thing, but I would say avoid the Nathan Edmondson run because he wears a mask. And I'm thinking, what the fuck has he got that mask on?
Why would you ever wear a mask?
He don't care.
No.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he gets friendly with a cop in a bar, and it's all about, oh, let's have coffee together. And I was like, one of the issues, it was just them sitting on a highway looking at all the stuck in traffic. And I'm like, what is this all about? I wasn't too taken with that one.
All right, Dan, what Punisher arcs aren't you a fan of?
Well, there's one, I think, that we were talking about briefly on air before we came on, is Punisher the Last Days, when he's got all fucked up and he's got all stitches over his face like Jigsaw. I can't remember the ins and outs of the story.
Oh, I don't think I read that.
But essentially, he kind of tracks down a nurse. And the talk at the time was, this is the fucking end, The Punisher, because it was like a 10-issue series. or Ten Issue Inside the Punisher run, and it was like, this is the, there's a massive change at the end of this, and at the time it was like, oh, a female character is going to take over,
right?
And it ends up he has plastic surgery to fix him, he's fixed his skin, and she transforms him into a black guy. And it's kind of like, fucking hell. At the time, okay, like, any crazy shit like that with the comics, it's like, oh, okay, this is what it is.
And anything to get on that front page of Wizard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, that would be the online shit that would kick off nowadays. But,
yeah.
I was kind of like, well, hold on. If he's got a scarred skin and she can't heal him, but she can actually take all the skin off his body and make him into a bat guy, how does that work? Yeah.
I'm really interested to see what they're doing this week. I haven't picked up this week's pile yet, but doesn't he become War Machine? He gets the War Machine armor, I think.
Okay.
And just goes on a rampage. So I'm looking to see what that looks. That looks quite interesting. I'm into that. I like that. He uses whatever's available to him, doesn't he?
I mean, for me, I'm not so much a fan of him in the sort of 616 universe, like completely concrete. I think that was why the Max was so appealing to me, because it was standalone, wasn't it? Really.
But it's the same as Batman. You know, we had a conversation earlier in the week. It's like Batman in his own universe, he's the only superhero knocking around.
But to me, I see the Netflix series as Max.
It is that sort of, you know, it stands alone. And I think that's why it works. You know, the series wasn't even supposed to exist when they were planning all of this. It's just the fact that he was so good in the Daredevil series.
Oh, was he? I didn't realise that. Yeah, well, that's good. I hope they do another one. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Yeah.
One of the things I would have, if kind of ever got the golden opportunity of writing the Punisher, was that he would never be involved in a romance, or because that kind of like would allow himself to be a bit happy, and then that would detract from why he's doing what he's doing, and
and that quite kind of doesn't work in teams as well.
That's one of the things that I don't like. I don't think Punisher should be in a team, and I know they put him in.
He's been in a few. He's been in Secret Defenders.
Yeah.
He's been in Thunderbolts. He was in Heroes for Hire. Yeah. He was in the Hydra in Secret Empire, which I didn't take to. I didn't like the fact he was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Didn't he wear like a sort of Captain America uniform at one point in the comics as well?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's a couple of lines he uses in
the series, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
The Garth Ennis run where like there's a bunch of hitmen out to kill him. And there's one guy who's like a kind of sniper, and he was in like the best in Desert Storm, and he sort of says, well, Desert Storm wasn't Vietnam, and it's just absolutely a whole other level of brutality. And Frank takes it apart. I do like the Vietnam veteran bit, but it kind of like you can't use that as the years go by.
In the last Max series, wasn't he meant to be that old? Wasn't he? He was meant to be really old.
Yeah.
And I kind of did, you know, it's got that Dark Knight thing about it, isn't it? Yeah. I don't mind that actually, but I think in these, like you say, in the 616, they've got to keep reimagining. Same they do with Tony Stark, the war that he was involved in.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and
but it's kind of such
a
baggage.
He has to wear the spandex, doesn't he? He's got to wear that spandex costume, which for me, you know, obviously, as an older reader now, I prefer him in like the flak jackets and like, you know, still with the skull. Always got to have that skull.
Yeah.
Always. Well, Jerry Conway designed it, didn't he? Jerry Conway wrote him, but also used to doodle. Like the characters as he wrote them, you know, the new characters. And I think it was either Ross Andrew or John Romita, I can't remember now, but he designed like a much bigger skull on him, because he said that's what, it's the same as the reason that they say Batman now has the bat symbol on his chest, because it avoids, the eye is pulled to it, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where your flak jacket is.
Yeah.
Underneath there, so you're not going to get shot in the face, you're just going to get shot in the big fucking skull, really? Or the big bat on your chest.
The skull, kind of bring it around to the films, it's kind of whoever the graphic designer was who made that skull graphic has kind of had a massive lasting effect
on
the symbol, because that's kind of like defined it from then on. Before then, it was kind of, lots of people had different interpretations, but that kind of grungy spray painted look seems to have certainly stuck.
One of my favourite things about the TV show, and there's many because I absolutely love it, if you've paid attention to my Twitter for the past couple of days, I've just been gushing about it, but it's on the, I'm a sucker for like TV show credits, you know, the credit sequence. Mm. And The Punisher's got a really nice one, but the highlight for me is always, and it's pretty brief, but the skull is formed out of loads of guns.
Yeah,
that's great. With light shining behind it, and it's just so well done. So well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we keep talking about we're going to watch the three movies, aren't we? And then talk about them. That's our little game we want to do as well, don't we? But shall I read that thing out I sent you two guys earlier?
Yes.
I found I was going through some sort of old fanzines earlier, and I thought, oh, well, this one says there's an article called Hollywood Goes Hero Crazy. And it was about the... It came out... It was a speakeasy number 96 in March 89.
89.
Right, yeah, okay. And it was 65 pence. And it quoted, Dreamboat Dolph Lundgren dyes his blonde locks black and dons a leather suit. And in brackets, someone has literally written, Hubba Hubba, to appear in Marvel's own Punisher. They didn't understand the Punisher, if they're putting that in there. Oh, they, let's face it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, I saw that, the pictures, that movie. Christ. You know.
Really? Oh, I'd have loved to have seen that at the fucking cinema.
Oh, God.
It was what it was, I suppose.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's back in the day, that old thing of, like, it's vaguely superhero, we'll take it.
Mm.
So I can look past. We can look past the faults because it's something to do with comics.
I do. I don't know why this is the thing I remember from it now. Doesn't he sort of like? He's sort of sitting cross-legged, like in a sewer somewhere, just sort of
nude,
meditating. Yeah. Nude.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's like a classic where they go up in the lift, and there's like a whole kind of room full of these kind of martial art practitioners with katanas. And they all get up to start, and then Frank and the other dude just like mow him down with guns.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the Punisher all over.
Yeah. That's what didn't work about the second one for me, because I liked all the, well, I don't like Travolta, he's a bit of an idiot, but yeah. I like Thomas Jane. I know Thomas Jane really, you know, really wanted to make the movie, yeah. But then he only fucking, and there's bits of it that are like straight out of Welcome Back Frank, aren't there? You know, this sort of thing. But he doesn't shoot anyone unless they shoot him first. I'm like, for fuck's sake, come on.
There's barely any gunfire in that at all, and it's like, that's fucking, you got to have guns in it. There's no getting around that.
And the Johnny Cash character was great. I thought, wow, he's a really good character. And then it just, oh, really, is it going there? Yeah. And then in the third one, you watch the third one, it's like watching Grindhouse, is it Punisher Warzone? It's like watching a Grindhouse movie.
Fucking mayhem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a bit where the free runners, and the one flips, and he hits him like the rocket in midair.
That was when I was watching it, and I laughed out loud when that happened.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in my head, there was a voice going, "This is bollocks."
Yeah. I like the bit where he shoots that guy who's just sitting in a chair. Is it Colin Salmon? Just goes, "What the fuck?" Like that.
Yeah,
because he's holding a child, and while he's holding a child, he blows a man's head off with a shotgun.
But literally blows a big hole out of it, doesn't he? With his
The whole bit at the beginning of it, when he's slaughtering the whole people sitting at the dinner table, that was great as well.
Yeah. But then, I don't know, Ray Stevenson, I really like Ray Stevenson. I think he wasn't really served too well by the script and
stuff in the film. If they made like a straight-to-video series with him in like that, prior to this series coming out, if they made that, I'd watched it. I think moments in that, they get him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Ray Stevenson's great, although he does bite it large in a certain film movie recently, which we saw a bit out of the blue, didn't he?
Don't get me started. But as you can tell,
this?
We don't want to spoil it. Now, as you can tell, folks, we've got a lot of opinions about the Punisher films and the TV series. So what we'll do in the future, and Tony's threatened it, we'll watch all of those previous films, because by that time, Dan would have caught up, and we'll have lots. So we'll do like a Punisher special. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the new year or something. It's not really a Christmassy show, is it?
They need to kind of come up with a concept for the Christmas show, because Christmas comics are fucking thin on the ground.
Yeah, I'd rather kill myself.
Unrelated to Christmas.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah. I tell you what, for the Christmas sort of show, that's when we'll have our best of.
Yeah, should we do like for the New Year one, rather than be like cheerful, should we just do things we hate?
Yeah.
Hate that. Let's do that.
But should we do it beyond the comic book realm as well? So we're just really bitter.
Yeah, I hate that bloke who drives a number 12 bus.
Oh.
Yeah.
I hate wet bread.
I've got one
Miss Bestie at school.
I don't know if anyone commutes in the train. You get those that sit on the outside of the fucking chair. And it's like, why did you just
move
in?
Oh, God, and they put their bag in the inside seat. It's like, what do you pay for two seats, wanker? I make a point of just sitting there sometimes.
This rigmarole. It was sort of like, just fucking move up.
What is it about your train journey that makes you drop the C-bomb so readily,
mate,
Dan?
You would get it. If you had to get the bloody train into London, you would get it every... Oh, mate, you'd turn into...
When you commute into town, like on the train, first couple of days, I don't know what everyone worries about, and then after a while, so I can see why fucking people end up hating this shit.
Ain't cheap either, is it? You know?
Hey, hey. Come on, let's be positive now. Like, we've got to
save all this venom.
Save the venom for the
new
year.
Let's choose something we really hate and talk about it in New Year.
Yeah.
And then everyone who's out there going, oh, my old acquaintance and all that shite.
Yeah.
We're just talking, what a load of
shit.
Oh, let's have a good time, London.
Anyway. But we had a few listener questions this week. Ooh, okay. Put the shout out. So, yeah, let's talk about some positive things, shall we?
Yeah. We're always positive on this show. Well, mostly.
We try
to be.
Yeah, we try to be. We're just curmudgeonly, eventually, by the end.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to go to the hate, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it is. No, it is a piece of piss. It's really like film reviewers, isn't it? They all go, I know Jason Wilson was talking about this week. He's saying, why is everyone just like mad about slagging off movies?
Yeah.
There's so many good movies out there. Yeah. You know, just watch a good movie. It's like, read a good comic, you know?
Just quickly back to the Punisher TV series.
Yeah.
They released the first 6 episodes for reviews and stuff. And there are people going, and they were sort of saying, oh, it's quite slow and boring.
I read some of that. I can't trust opinions on the net nowadays, and I don't.
No.
You got to judge yourself because.
Apart from us, you can trust us.
Yeah, we can't really.
No.
I wouldn't be in a lift on your own if it broke down with one of us, to be fair.
Yeah, basically, because of our diets, the air is going to get pretty thick.
And Vince is a bit handsy. Oh, God, don't start that.
Yeah, I was about to
say. Did you do the Vince CK joke last week?
Yeah, can we not make that a thing?
We can't do that yet, really.
No. What do you mean, yet? Yeah. No, we're not going to do it, Dan. Right.
Next year, 2018.
Yeah. But what we are going to do, we are going to answer some questions from our lovely listeners. B.E. Mura from @Mura _
comics. Hopefully he has his t-shirt by now.
Hey!
Awesome.
Wearing it loud and proud.
He's from Chicago.
Big love to all our listeners from the States. We love you all.
Out of all my patrons, he's the one that asks for postcards when I say, who wants to illustrate a postcard?
Oh, is he? Oh, good.
Yes, and I do one once a month for him.
Oh, nice.
Oh, you're nice, aren't you, Dan?
So, other patrons, pull your finger out.
Yeah.
Let me draw something for you.
He gets very violent when he wants to do something for people. Anyway, the question is, I'm curious as to what you all think makes for good writing in a comic versus other forms of media.
Oh,
that's an interesting one.
I've not seen that one.
Oh, Bisto.
Good writing. I like a bit of depth. Depends on the comic, though, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like a bit of depth, a bit of character. I don't like obvious stuff. You know, when you're watching, I see it most on TV, when you're watching a TV program and you think, oh, he's going to say, don't go. He's going to say, I'll sew myself out. You know, all the go-to phrases are just easy cliches. Sometimes I think in comics you occasionally get that, don't you?
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
How many times?
Like the one I got, not on my watch. So I don't use that line anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are they going to kill the president? Not on my watch. Or something shit like that.
What would somebody say in real life?
Yeah.
You know, if a robot landed in their street. You know, you've got to think about it like that, haven't you? You know?
What would you say?
I'd say, can I have sex with you?
What would you say, Dan?
Fuck.
Yeah, so the same.
Yeah.
Mine would just be a large, loud, probably fart noise. Anyway.
Yeah.
Like robots.
But when it comes to, like, comic writing and stuff, and... Have there been many comics where you can telegraph something? You know how we watch films or TV and you get to a certain point and you think, right, so that character's going to die, or, you know, this is clearly going to happen. I've already sussed out what's going to happen. I haven't found that happens so much in comics that I read. Do you?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the old red shirt scenario, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, in the TV series, they'll introduce someone, you think, what are they doing that for? Oh, he's going to die.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like the cutaway to someone sitting in their car looking up in the sky. You know, something's going to happen to him. We don't know who he is, but yeah, you don't see that as much, do you? I suppose. No.
Do you think that's because of the form of the media, because of like sequential storytelling and stuff? That's a pacing thing that probably helps with screenplays and scripts and stuff, because you know this is going to happen, that leads to this.
I find definitely like Western TV and Western films, they all seem to use the same in film and TV. They all seem to use the same tricks and beats and stuff, so it's very easy to predict when something's going to happen. Yeah. Rarely, I'd say I'm caught off guard by something. And go, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Hmm.
Yeah, usually it's great when that does happen. You know, like they foreshadow stuff, and it's like, well, by the way this story's put together, this character, something's going to happen to them for it to kind of work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
Occasionally, but in comics, you see a long running series where two people fall in love and it's all going really happily, and you think, yeah, something's going to happen there.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of drama. It's kind of fiction as a whole, isn't it? You know, if someone gets beaten, they're going to come back and beat that character back again. You know, if the hero gets a beating off someone, off Ultron, you know that they're going to come back and win against Ultron. Yeah. You know, there's a little bit of that occasionally. But I kind of like that I feel comfortable, you know.
Yeah.
I'm settled with that, I think. You know.
I do like that, what you said about the subverts, you think X is going to happen and instead the writer gives you Y. It's nice when that happens, but we had this conversation, I think, when we did the Wimbledon Comic Con, about essentially if you've got the story and you've got to translate it into these different mediums like film, a screenplay, a comic, it's the understanding and the pacing of it which makes the writing work. So if you're just presuming the story's solid, it's getting that pacing right and telling it within the confines of the comic. That's what kind of...
Yeah, and I don't mind slow pacing. I don't mind fast pacing. Nope. I just think it's just that it's well done.
Mm.
And I think comics, whatever pacing, the dialogue.
There's got to be something captivating, isn't there? There's got to be...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, there's been comics that I've looked at, and there's so many speech bubbles that I think, oh, God, you know, it's almost intimidating to see that much sort of dialogue or things going on in a page. But sometimes when it starts off with less dialogue and you're already sucked in by that point, that you don't realise that you're reading all of this dialogue. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. I think it depends on how captivating the comic is, isn't it? And it's a combination of art and words, isn't it? You know, so the art can carry you through to that complicated scene, and it can carry you through to a quieter scene, you know.
Mm.
I think it very much depends on what's going on.
Yeah.
I think comics have got less wordy, I think, on a whole. Yeah. The mainstream comics got less wordy. I mean, because I come from the Bronze Age, I didn't mind, like, some comics would have almost like half a side of text on it.
Mm.
And it was this sort of very poetical thing. And I think sometimes that works. It works sometimes, you know. Good writing. There's nothing, in the small press scene, there's nothing worse, you know, just to be very sort of base roots about it, there's nothing worse than fucking not knowing a spell.
Yeah.
You know.
I would say, when you're writing the comic, especially small press, is like, don't go for mediocrity. Just do something different and push it. Do you know what I mean? Because there's 101 fucking superhero comics that you can pick up from small press. I'm not naming any names because probably you won't be listening to this show. But like, it's, oh, fuck me, this is Spider-Man, or fuck me, this is Battle Punisher, or whatever.
Yeah.
Done before. If you're gonna go to all the effort of making a comic, do something exciting and different with it. And
I think small press especially is influenced by outside medium. And I think you got, for a while in the small press, you got every second comic was a Buffy comic.
Mm.
You know, and then every second comic was How I Met Your Mother. And every, you know, there's, you see these little sort of vibes going through it.
Yeah.
You know.
A blip of kind of...
Yeah, popularity. What's popular at the moment, you know.
Mm.
Even to sort of stuff like the themes, you know, the political themes at the moment, and, you know, social, you know, psychological themes that are going on at the moment. You see that and you think, oh, not again.
Yeah.
I don't think we need another Trump comic, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I really don't think we need another one at the moment, unless someone does it like extremely well and comes at it from an angle that none of us have seen. But I don't really think, I think I'm done
I
with
reckon
that.
If we got one more Trump comic, it'd probably end his presidency. So don't speak too soon, Tony Esmond.
And that's satire, folks.
Yeah.
I think you've got to captivate your audience fairly quickly now, because as the scene is bigger than ever, especially with independent and self-publishing, there's so much out there. And yes, you may have the amazing pitch, you may have the amazing synopsis, which sometimes, like, I've heard stuff on the show and I'm like, well, I want to read that. But if I read that comic, and it probably hasn't, you know, when you're excited about reading something, it has to deliver. So if I read that then, and it doesn't give me what I want, I'm not going to follow it up, which is, you know, it's just the nature of things. So the pressure is on to make, like, really captivating comics, or comics that are fun to read.
Yeah, and comics that are... I don't mind something that's a bit out there as well, you know? Yeah. Something I haven't seen before.
Mm.
You know, have a play with stuff. Yeah. If you're competent and confident enough to do it, then go for something that's a little bit different, because it's the only way you'll be seen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Like,
But for instance, if you're doing a story that is in a genre or is a type of story that has been done 1,000 times before, do it brilliantly. Do it well, and have it wear its heart on its sleeve, and just be proud of what it is, and just go for it, you know. Because like Dan said, it with the superhero comics, if they're just generic and they've got nothing going for them, the readers aren't going to stick around.
Yeah,
you know. But there's a reason why. I mean, obviously it's a bigger title. There's a reason why Invincible's on 100 and however many issues.
Yeah.
And he's not a mainstream hero.
Yeah, yeah. They've taken that and they've I don't want to say twisted, because they haven't. They've just run with it in clever ways, you know. And I think a good. I mean, there's a million superhero comics out there, and I read a million of them. And there's some that are really good. And I think a superhero is just a banner for, you know, something that is you know, a melodrama, or a teen angst drama, or a political allegory, or know, this sort of thing. There's something to play within everything, you know?
Yeah.
One thing with The Walking Dead and Invincible, they run under the same precepts of, like, with The Walking Dead, you'd have the horror film of the zombies attacking and then the end, where essentially Walking Dead just carries that on to the extreme of, like, what do they do after that for years and years and years. Invincible's the same. Like, it'd be like an issue of Spider-Man where something happens, but then usually Spider-Man just reverts straight back to the status quo. With Invincible, it keeps on pushing forward and forward and forward.
Yeah.
And changes matter and they affect the story going on. So if you picked up Invincible issue 10 and then jumped forward to 100, you'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's the art in seeing where it should go.
Yeah.
You know, when you write a story, you've got to think, well, where would this go now? You know, where would it naturally go? Oh, we were talking about Mr. Miracle last week, weren't we? Vince, you were talking about it. I've just read the first 1.5 issues and I absolutely loved it. But that, again, is a character who's appeared, you know, he's dotted in and out the DC universe for like 20, 30 years, isn't he? But he's found this, and he's essentially a sort of superhero cosmic, you know, sort of thing. But he's found, like, such a clever way to tell the story with it.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's
also really clever.
Yeah.
Going back to the writing a story that you want to write and tell and you would want to read, rather than sort of saying, well, I'm going to do this because people will like this. Well, so if you don't like it and it doesn't appeal to you, how would you expect other people to
like it? Yeah, don't go around thinking, what would people like?
What's
on the side of that bus? You know, what's on telly at the moment? Because in 6 months' time, it's not going to be what people want.
No.
Or is unlikely to be, you know?
Yeah. People don't know what they want until you give it to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was fine, that statement, till the old year.
Well, normally, at the end of every episode, our listeners are like, well, I don't want that again.
Yeah.
But, like, as an anecdote from being a designer, you might have this, Vince, like, or have someone saying, right, I want my ad to look like this. And you think, well, that looks fucking shit. So you do it the way you want and send it to him. He goes, oh, that's really great. That's really good. Really like that. And it's like, well, you kind of, people don't know, like, what they're after until you sort of give them a better version of whatever they might want, or you kind of jump ahead and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Susie was talking about not having a comic idea. Unfortunately, she got it in the most tragic of ways, but, like, that spurred the creation of Periwinkle. And, like, that's a story she's got and a story she wants to tell, and that absolutely comes through in the comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So,
yeah, there's a lot.
So, essentially, do what you like, but make it interesting, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know.
Simple answer. Yeah. Just a quick one. A
couple of times there, so...
Yeah.
That's one of my my go-to phrases at work when people say, "Oh, can I go home early today?" I go, "Yeah, do what you like." And if I say that, they go, "Oh, he's not happy. I won't go home early now." And I look good, and they've made their own mind up. It works really well.
You haven't said no.
Yeah, I've said no. They can't go and say, "He said I wasn't allowed to go home early." I said, "No, I just said do what you like. I don't care."
I love your voices. So good. So good.
One side of the convention.
Yeah, Dan sounded exactly like that. Right, just quickly, our friend James Gibbs.
Yes.
Trouble with Gibbles, as he is on Twitter.
I love that new name he's got.
He just wants to know about the anthology. Can we have a competition to name the letters page that I've decided you have to have? Well,
we
James,
decide. We already. Well, he knows already, we've talked about this.
He's trying to take credit for our good work. Unbelievable. But yes, our anthology is going to have a cheeky letters page in it, which
because we're it to be like really insulting.
oh God! Well, we'll see. We'll see leading up to it. We will probably ask for applications for letters soon, and yes, there may be a competition to name the letters page. But just bear in mind, folks, when you obviously probably want to insult us with your answers, this is also something that is going to people who don't listen to the show. So there is going to be a certain element of seriousness.
Someone
to it.
Will pick this up and think, "What the fuck?
Why is it all three guys, one cup?"
Yeah.
Or band of.
Yeah.
Get this. Oh. Up.
Twice.
I've got to write down the time every time you do it, Dan.
Does it get edited out?
Yes.
Yeah. It does. Oh,
he bleeps, doesn't he?
Unbelievable.
You say the word, he's going to bleep it.
Right.
I think the bleeping swearing just makes it all the more funnier.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, well, you would, wouldn't you?
If you only did it for one person as well, that'd make it
He's gone
funnier.
Quiet now because he's writing times down.
Well, I have to with you two. I almost called you the C word. Yes.
So once we let that word run, does it have to be bleeped for whatever thing we play on?
I think ladies don't like it, I suppose, or some ladies don't. I know a few that do quite like it.
Right, it's not it's not a nice word, let's be honest.
The A bomb has to be dropped in the C bomb case.
But
is there any other words that we're not allowed to use? Should we discuss this now? I think it's worth discussing. Any other words that are like really insulting?
Mixtape.
Yeah, Rich Johnson.
Oh dear. Anyway, that's the question.
Swindon Comic Con.
We are Funko Pop. Anyway,
I sent you. I was still laughing at that thing I sent you. That bloke who was selling Funko Pops on a page selling comics.
Yeah.
And his picture, his profile picture was him getting married with like the least excited look on his face.
Just the best.
Great. I wondered where they came from.
Yeah.
We're so horrible, aren't we? Oh, well, never mind. Now, our good friend Daryl Thorpe, old Thorpey, who made so many of our listeners' ears bleed when he said hello when he was a guest a couple of weeks ago, he sent in a question. He said, "Every year, I'll read Scott Pilgrim 1-6 just because I love it. Aww. Are there any comics that you guys go back to again and again to read over?"
Yeah, there are. There's some for me. You guys go first, because you know my list is going to be long.
Oh, Jesus, he's got a list, Dan.
God, I have to look at the shelves.
Yeah, looking at the shelves.
I haven't got my shelves near me.
Yeah. Well, me, I would say, obviously everyone knows anything by Paul Gillespie and Master of Kung Fu. I look at that regularly. I like rereading, just purely for nostalgia purposes, the George Perez, David Michelinie Avengers. I like that. Killraven. I go back and read Killraven all the time. What else? Mage.
Nice.
Okay.
Nexus. Grimjack. Scout. Oh, go on, you go. You do a couple.
You
got me.
You got to do Martial Law, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, I always reread that one. That's an absolute classic.
Yeah. Probably more recently, books like The Fix. That always gets a reread from me. Body Bags, which is one of my
favorite
series of all time. That one gets a lot of read. Boneyard by Richard Moore. A lot of Liberty Meadows by Frank Cho. That always gets.
I've never read that actually. Is that good?
Yeah, it's really great.
Is it a continuing story, or is it just sort of little short things?
It is a kind of a continuing story, but you know, there's lots of. It's the one joke newspaper strip because it was running in the newspaper for like 10 years, I think. So there's so many collections of it, but it did from the first strip to where it ended. There was a narrative running through it as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got to say Minimum Wage because after being like the world's biggest fan of that comic, I'm now friends with the creator and I still love it, absolutely love it. And I've got a page of it in front of me. Nightfall, I think that's a much underrated story. I know the art jumps about a bit, but I really like the idea of it. And Longbow Hunters as well. And I tell you what, I reread last year that I hadn't read for ages was 52.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's a really clever series.
I always go back to that. I do like the fact that it kind of foreshadows a lot of stuff and it's very subtle.
Yeah.
But that's really nice.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and it's got some really, really big ideas in it as well.
I'll always go back and read like the Planetary and Authority.
They
go down really well. The Supreme Power, the Max Comics series.
Yes, that's good. I really like that. Yeah. Have you read Midnight Nation by those guys as well?
No.
That's worth looking at, mate.
Yeah, that's
a good one. I have your...
That's Straczynski and Frank, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Really nice story, yeah.
I've started eyeing up the bookcases now. There's all these comics. Oh, shit, I haven't read that in ages. I want to read that.
Britain. I do Captain Britain.
Captain Britain omnibus that I've got. Yeah, I love it.
The old Grant Morrison X-Men run. The new X-Men.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's good.
Here's the flip side to that question, then.
Okay.
Well, in a sense. What's a graphic novel... or the trade or whatever that you loved reading but you've never read it since, purely because like once is enough, you know?
Some books I think are meant to be read just once, aren't they?
Yeah
I know what you mean. Fables, I read through Fables.
What, the whole
and I
lot?
Loved it. And I really enjoyed it and I thought that's a cracking story. I don't really need to go back and but I did really enjoy it. You know,
mine was V for Vendetta.
Okay.
Yeah.
I read that and I was kind of like, I enjoyed that, but I don't really, I've got no kind of burning desire to kind of pick that up again.
Yeah.
Off the shelves.
My one is another Alan Moore one, which might be a bit shocking to say, is Watchmen. I really did enjoy that when I read it, like from cover to cover. But I've done it. You do what I mean? I don't feel the need. I know there's a lot of people out there who will probably read it yearly, but for me, you know, that story did what it had to do. I don't kind of want to revisit it, if that makes sense.
Looking at one right now is someone got this for me, Batman Dark Victory by Jeff Lobb and Tim Sale. It's okay. I've kind of,
was that after the Long Halloween?
Yeah, the Long Halloween, it's kind of, the Long Halloween did its bit and then this one feels like a bit tacked on and it kind of never, it's kind of
okay.
Yeah. Perhaps I should get rid of that.
The Leo Audubon Beetlejuice Survivors thing, I read that and I kind of treasure the fact that I enjoyed it so much at the time.
Yeah.
And it's got so many like moments you go, wow, like shock moments. I don't know whether I want to ruin the experience of enjoying it that much by going back to it. That's a bit weird, I know, but that's kind of a little bit how I feel about it. It watered down the enjoyment I had of it, I suppose.
I find that, you know, you could be like that with a few European sort of books. I mean, we love Carthago. I mean, dear God, we love it. And the first time you experience that, it's amazing. I will go back to reread bits of it, but it's more like certain moments.
You're right on that, mate. Completely.
Yeah. It's quite a heavy read in some places.
But it also works in the same way those Leo books where suddenly you go, I didn't expect that. You know, that's and the enjoyment is in the page turn of like, wow. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of times. Yeah.
There you go.
Interesting. That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good one. Yeah. And there's so many now that I'm looking at my shelf, so I want to say that I reread all the time.
Mm.
So, okay. Yeah. Maybe return to that one day, that one.
Yeah.
One I enjoyed, I read, and I probably won't go back and read again, was The Trial of the Flash. I've got such good memories of reading it as a kid. Carmine Infantino, and it's got a little couple of twists in it you don't expect, and I don't think I'll go back to that one. There you go. Yeah.
I think one of the series, the longer form series, like you say, like Fables was quite a long series, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, yes.
So I can understand that you wouldn't necessarily want to start all that again. And I probably think that's probably the case for maybe a lot of these longer form stories, but I think one of the ones that is constantly readable is Preacher.
Yes, I know, mate. You can just grab a trade and stick it in your bag for the train to work stuff. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, and it's the one I recommend the most as well.
Yeah,
definitely.
You can't go wrong with that.
No. Matt Strott at Messy Comics, hey. He said he's taken advantage of the 240 characters that you can add to a team. Yes, what we'd like to see. He said, with it taking so long to produce a single comic, do you think indie creators would be better served with longer stories or one-shots? It seems odd we use the blueprint for a book designed to be monthly but can only produce yearly.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, it's asking a lot for audiences to stick around for years.
I honestly think that kind of the idea of just doing one-shots, read it and you're done, that the idea appeals to me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, because you can just walk up to the convention table and it's like, if I've got Vanguard issue 13 sitting there, so well, fucking hell, you're going to get that.
Yeah, I'll get you.
Whereas
yeah.
issue one yeah. or the standalone, that's fine.
Yeah, I think from a sales point of view, that's a really good point, Dan. I think if you can have different things that are like little stories you can pick up, and I think that is more common. We're talking about Gareth Brooks earlier, weren't we? And I think he does that, and he's been very successful doing that. And Tilly Walden has been very successful just doing one-off books. From a sort of purely sort of selfish point of view, I'd like to do albums. I think Porcelain is the role model for us all.
Yeah.
You know, I think those three volumes that, you know, came out were almost yearly, didn't they?
Yeah. Self-contained, you know? But they all work together.
Mm.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Yeah.
Well, what we're doing for the ACP thing, the anthology, I think that's great in the fact that they're all of them kind of, they're going to be split apart into four, but when they're brought together, that's a whole story in itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For each of us. That's going to be interesting.
We will essentially all have a one shot at the end of it, eventually, but you're going to have to buy the issues to read it in part.
Yeah. As we go along. And the one shots will have more in it, won't they? I suspect, if we're final as I am. Yeah.
My experience with this, and next year my plan is to have 4 and 5 of the Red Mask out and done and finish that arc. But, you know, I have fallen foul of like other projects getting in the way or, you know, delays or this, you know, I've missed this year on releasing an issue, which I will be honest, I'm really quite upset about.
In retrospect, though, would you have liked to have stuck it out as one go, or would you prefer to? Because it certainly suits that episodic quality, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, I'm. You know, I don't regret what I've done, and I will be very proud. You know, because I love the individual issue format. I've just always have, because that's what I read.
Yeah.
The whole
book. Well, it suits that story as well, mate.
It does.
Yeah.
But if you ask me now, is that how I go about doing a comic? No, I wouldn't. I would do that sort of one shot. I'd probably do a 40-pager. Maybe after the 5-issue arc is done, the next time I pick up the Red Mask, there'll be a 30-page one shot. You know, it's not going to be an ongoing series. The 5 issues will be the arc. You know, and I started it, you know, when before life beat me down. No,
before you met us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, before my hopes and dreams were turned to ash in my mouth. Not like that, Tony, you dirty bugger. But obviously when you start making comics, you're like, oh yes, I'm going to make comics, I'm going to make a series, I'm going to do this. And obviously the first issue and the amount of work that goes into it is a massive learning curve. You know, I've never regretted doing what I'm doing, but I would probably do it in a slightly different format now, because also I think that the market is changing in that way. We're getting a lot more one shots and, you know, individual trades, you know. Certainly a lot of the small press publishers, they're publishing these books that are like 80 pages, you know.
Do you still think there's that thing of the comics being viewed as a kind of a relatively disposable medium, and
maybe
you want to jump in and get it done? To be fair though, would you go in and buy, like, say there was a fantasy series or a crime series and it's like book 1 of 20 or whatever, you'd be like, oh, fucking hell. Whereas it kind of like, it's a one shot and it's one and done. You invest your time and money and that's what you've got, rather than not a continued investment where you've got to keep on laying out for something.
I think part of it as well is you can do a comic and get it out quickly.
Mm.
You know, if you're Dave Brown, you could probably do one a week.
Yeah.
Your best Dave. But But I think you can do that and get it on a convention table. So you can, if you want, have a couple out a year if you really push it.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah. I think the longer form thing, you can go to a convention and have nothing new.
Yeah.
And almost be like, oh, nothing new. But I'm working on this 80-page comic, you know.
Yeah.
I also, I say about the what are you doing it for? If you're doing it to make comics to sell, to get money from, it's a very different prospect to kind of, yeah, you're just making comics for fun or you're sticking them online, because the issue ones and the one shots are going to sell so much better in print on, yeah, a convention table than perhaps a long running series.
I mean, even the some of the indie stuff that has moved on, you know, has got quite a few issues, have stuck to that sort of almost a one shot format. I know the Loose Cannon Boys, when they first started, they had a three sort of issue arc, I think, or was it, or have they started doing a longer form story? A lot of their issues you can just pick up and read it. Do you know what I mean? Even though it's issue four or issue five, you can.
I kind of like that with Marvel comics. It used to be able to just pick up and read a comic of Marvel Team Up or Spider Man or Hulk or something, and it would be a story. There'd be short connections to the next issue, but I used to kind of like that. You could just dip into a series anywhere.
Yeah. He used to be like the kind of thing with a soap opera, like say, right, oh, you, not that you ever would say, I'm going to sit down and watch fucking EastEnders. But the idea of going back, oh, I can't watch EastEnders now because I've got to go back all the way to the beginning and catch up.
Exactly.
Like,
that's
you just get stuck in, and like before you know it, one or two issues in, you're up to date, as it were. I was using horror terminology there.
No, you're right. I lent the preacher one where he's the sheriff in the town. Mm. I lent that to someone at work. I thought that's really accessible on its own story, you know.
Yeah.
And, I lent it to the bloke and he said, I really liked it. I didn't understand it, though, because it just puts you in at the middle of the story. And the Coronation Street example, because I knew this guy watched Coronation Street. I said, well, you watch Coronation Street, don't you? He went, yeah. I said, well, when you started watching it, there's all these characters in it. Did you have to think, oh, I don't understand it, I'm going to turn a blind eye and don't really want to watch it now? It's the same thing, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think for a lot of like independent creators as well, when it comes to like the if you're doing a longer form story, but in single issues, I find that web comics are the ones that are doing it best. I'm not just saying that because Vanguard's a very good example of it, but
you got it there on your table, haven't you? You've got the whole series there.
But I like it when web comics like break it down into those singular issues as well. Or chapters, that they call it a lot of times in webcomics.
It plays on our collector mentality as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think that, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's could be a turnaround down the line. I don't think it happened for quite a while, but that kind of wanting to own things in print.
Yeah.
Do you think now kind of, well, I already know in some instances that's like, it's like you consume it digitally and then you move on, and keeping it is
They've
not
done
an
it with
option.
Movies, haven't they? It used to be that I would collect DVDs and I'd like the DVDs and movies I've enjoyed, but now I know that I can probably find it on Amazon Prime or Netflix or something.
Yeah.
Or YouTube, you know.
Well, it's kind of, this kind of got me on Instagram the past couple of weeks. They've been running these awful fucking Justice League ads with Mercedes, I think it is.
Batman drives this outrageous Mercedes in it.
Yeah, and then something happens, and like the Flash has to do something. Right. And like one of there's a couple of comments saying, "Oh, this is fucking shills, and this is such a sellout." And then there were loads of comments saying, "Well, what's the problem? It's only advertising." And I just like, I can't believe these fucking attitudes being expressed. But that's the attitudes of people coming along, and they've kind of been broken down.
They've just got to argue about something. This
commercialization and. The media, you don't no longer own the media, you stream it or you rent it for the time you watch it and then it's gone.
I mean, do people not remember Hostess fruit pies?
I don't think I've ever had one of them, in the comics.
I used to see them and think, oh, I wonder what that is. Sounds really nice.
Yeah.
I always remember the Three Musketeers chocolate bar used to get advertised in Marvel comics all the time.
That was like torment to us UK readers because we never had any of that shit.
I wanted grit. I wanted to be able to go around selling grit and earn a bicycle out of it.
Yeah. Or they'd like draw superheroes this like 2x3-inch ad that's really grainy.
Yeah. We'll get those X-ray visions that you can see through women's clothes with. What?
They don't work. Well, trust me. No, but you know what I mean? Like in future, we're just doing your comments, reading comics digitally or online. Is that the way it's going to be? And having it in print is just kind of ultimately going to fade away. I don't know. I can see it going that way.
It'll go that way to a certain extent, same as a lot of things, haven't they? You know, and there'll be a little bit of a hang-on somewhere, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe for, you know, a while, then 100 years in the future, everyone will be just jacked in by their eyeballs, won't they?
Yeah. One of the films that brought up really old is Rollerball. In that, you don't have media anymore. Like, you go out to, like, in the film, it's the library they go to and get it, but nowadays we stream and stuff. And then they've retroactively gone back and edited stuff out that they don't want people to see. I guess
Is that the one with LL Cool J in it?
Fucking hell, I've never seen that. So
I've seen the first 10 minutes of it. That's all I've managed.
God, you know it's bad if he stopped it. Dan briefly
Ninja films.
Oh God, I did a webcomic called Shit Ninja. I'll send you it one day.
Oh, please don't. Now, Dan briefly brought up Justice League. James Gibbs said, Tony, can you give a shout out to Kurt Swan?
Of course I can. Everyone loves Kurt Swan, don't they?
The man has been vastly unappreciated for his body of work. That's me quoting James Gibbs. That's not my words.
Do you know what? I saw this from James while I was sitting through waiting for the post credit scene, and literally 20 seconds later, his name appeared in the list of thank yous.
Oh, nice.
Did it really?
It did, yeah. And I thought, how cool is that? He drew Superman from 1948 through to the 80s. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This guy is all over it. I don't think he gets enough credit for just being very readable and quite iconic. You know, he had that real take on him that I really, really enjoyed. And I know for example, he was the first person to draw Batman and Superman together in Superman 76, June 1952. There you go. Do you guys remember him? Because I'm a bit older than you, but do you remember his stuff? Or
there's the one that always sticks in my mind is there's a sheet of headshots of Superman that he's done, and you get from the side, from below, up and down, whatever, and it's just like that kind of that look is Superman kind of chiseled in my head.
Yeah,
his take on him.
Yeah. But I know after Crisis on Infinite Earths, John Byrne took over, didn't he? He went to DC and did Superman. And he was kind of sidelined a bit, Kurt Swan, which is a real shame.
Yeah.
But if you look at one of the one that is often now quoted as being one of the greatest Superman stories ever, is Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow by Alan Moore.
Yeah, that's fucking
great. He drew that with George Perez on inks.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. How great is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really shame. Do you know this story about the rarest Superman comic? Have you heard this story?
No.
There's a Superman comic that he drew. I can't remember for the life of me who wrote it, but it was called This Island, and then I think it's Bradman, written by David P. Levin. There you go. And it was commissioned through DC, as I understand it, as a private commission of a whole comic for Godfrey Bradman for his son's bar mitzvah. Godfrey Bradman was like a real estate tycoon, and I think I'm going to say the 80s, 70s or 80s. And they did DC basically did a whole Superman comic, and just did it for the skeezer, like one issue for him.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
And
Kurt Swan drew that. How weird is that? That's just Superman is littered with these really interesting stories though, isn't he, you know?
Yeah.
But how things turned up, like Kryptonite first appeared in the TV series and not in the, or was it the radio series? One of the two. It never started in the comic series and stuff. There's always like little interesting things that comes out of Superman. And Kurt Swan actually appeared in a Superman comic, if either of you knew this, in annual number 9 in 1983 called I Flew with Superman, where Swan himself helps Superman solve a crime and Superman takes him flying. And I thought, do you know what? That's great. I love the fact that happened for a guy who's been drawing it for, you know, 4 or 5 decades, the comic. To be actually be in it. I think it's really good. Yeah, Alan Moore posits that there's a little bit of Kurt Swan in Superman now, because he drew him so much. You know, he added so much of his personality. And if you look at the comics that Kurt Swan drew, there's very few that didn't really have a Superman character in them. You know,
did a
bit of Aquaman, and he did a bit of this and that here and there, but mostly it was the Superman stuff. And it still holds up as a nice readable slice of history. You know, you go back to some of these sort of Golden Age, Silver Age comics, and some of them are pretty unreadable, aren't they? You know?
Yeah,
but it's still pretty good.
I've got a central Superman with some of his stuff in it, and
it's just fun, isn't it?
Yeah, love the ones with Batman and Superman, like swap suits or swap identities, and
yeah,
Elissa Fulham So what, you look exactly the same as each other, like twins.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't look similar in Justice League, to be fair.
He gave Superman one hell of a jawline as well.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And I know that Grant Morrison cites his stuff as like an inspiration for a lot of his work, doesn't he? Yeah. So, for example, the Doom Patrol stuff and stuff like that, because it was just so wacky.
Yeah. Certainly, people like Frank Quitely must be.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Because like, those are the stories you need to be telling Superman, where like they're fucking absolutely mental and like he's up against like existential problems and massive world changing problems.
Yeah. Something. That, yeah.
Rather than the sort of like, there was one I picked up out of the long box where he's like tackling some street use with some guns, and it's like, this is just ridiculous. There's no challenge here whatsoever. And I think he like smashes his use into like a disused building. He goes, oh, don't worry, I checked beforehand, there's no one in it. And it's like, oh, what? You've smashed three kids into like a disused building. I'm sure that's going to go well for them.
Yeah.
Like hitting like an I-beam at like a couple hundred miles an hour. There, yeah, it'd be fine.
I'll tell you what, in the Justice League movie, there's one bit, I can't ruin it, where you'll think, that's class. They understand him there.
Oh, nice.
There's
okay.
One moment in it, and I thought, that's so nice they've just done that. Mm. You'll realise when you see it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they're getting better in this one than they did in Man of Steel. I think they understand him a little bit better.
Man of Steel, yeah. I've gone on about that film, but to me that's just not Superman. He's not the character. I don't know what they've...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You can't... Not all the characters can be fucking bad boys. And
yeah, exactly.
Superman's got to be good and wholesome and you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I really like that film. That's all I'm going to say.
You're joking.
No, I'm a big fan of Man of Steel. Oh, there you go. Well, I've said
this
it.
Shit like when his dad, Kevin.
I'm not going to argue the specifics with you, Daniel.
This walks off into a tornado. So like, no, don't. I've got this. I was like, well, this is yeah. Gonna, what? Why are you doing that then? I don't know. Reasons. Okay. See you later, Dad.
That would have been amazing if he said that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and take the middle ground and say, I quite like Russell Crowe in it.
Yeah.
That's
you know, but when he kind of riding like around you. On Krypton on lizards. Was that in it? I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was a paper dream, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah, each their own.
Yeah, save that for the Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for that trouble with Gibbles. Yeah.
Yep.
Good shout, man. He definitely needs a shout out these days, I think.
In regards to the Viper comic, he's been sending me a couple of images and stuff, and he sent me the cover to the Cyclones 1980s film with Jeffrey Combs and some Playboy ladies in it.
All
and
right.
The cover is just like there's the bikes like a third of it, and this half naked woman that's sort of like superimposed over the top is the rest of it.
Well, cool. I noticed today that Robot Jocks is on Netflix.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, and Arena. Do you remember Arena?
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
I loved that shit as a kid.
Yeah, someone needs to do a comic of that.
I'll do it.
Arena.
Maybe for the next anthology, Tony.
Maybe.
So, thank you for all your questions, folks.
Yeah.
Lovely. Now, do we have any shout-outs this week?
Yes, I've got a couple.
Go for it.
You go first, because I've just got to find mine quickly, sorry.
I ain't got any.
Me neither. Shall we vamp, Dan?
I'm almost there. Hang on.
I'm not going to ask you about the train because that'll just start you off, Dan.
No, I've been cracking on with the old. This is the really busy period at work in the year, so kind of like getting Vanguard out is really tough when you've fucking done like 10 hours. Mm. Like, 50 fucking. It's like, oh, let's go home and do Vanguard. But stay on top of it.
Yeah.
I'm not missing.
I found it now. We're right now. We're all right. To tie in with the fact that it's been 50 years since the first British fanzine came out, we've talked about this before. Do you remember this? We talked about it with David Hathaway Price.
Yes.
Yeah. Me and Dan have done something for it. Me and the Mighty Prolix have done something for it. But David is basically bringing out a big old fanzine that celebrates 50 years of British fandom in magazine form, if that makes sense. He spent the last few years basically creating a big record of all the fanzines from the UK that you can get his hands on. You name it, from the most obscure ones through to stuff like Speakeasy and Arkansas and all this sort of thing as well. But he is also, above and beyond putting this together, he's offering free adverts. So if you've got something that's like a new comic or a Kickstarter that's coming out or something you want to advertise, a podcast, I think we're going to take part in it, definitely, is you can send it through to him. But he's asking for an A6 portrait or A5 landscape ad. So 300 DPI TIFF, whatever, I don't know what that means. Someone explains.
High resolution, that's what that means, Tony.
Oh, thank you. With the front cover pick of whatever the comic is or whatever the Kickstarter is that you've got for sale, he will put an advert in this. And it's getting a lot. It's getting big distribution, this is. And I'm personally really excited about it. I read through, I'm on a sort of group with him and the other creators, and he adds to this list of things that are going to be in the magazine. And there is some cracking stuff in there. Some real old school stuff they found, some new stuff people have written. We've got me and Nick have got a Cockney Kung Fu strip in it, so it's worth picking up even just for that. So if you know David Hathaway Price on Facebook, send him a message and ask to get involved. Or he is certainly a member of our Facebook group, so post it there. Or if not, if you're not a member of the Facebook group or you're not on Facebook or whatever, then just email me or message me on Twitter or something, and I will put you in touch with him. But it's a great opportunity to have an advert in this magazine that's going to go out probably just as digital, maybe as a print, and it's going to be all around the world. If you've got a Kickstarter coming or you've got a comic out, then get on board it. And he's a top bloke, David, old school comic fan. I know he's a listener. I really want everyone to get behind this. Really good stuff. There you go.
That's
awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Do you, Vince? Do you know what TIFF stands for?
I do you know what? I've forgotten it.
You told me as well, and I can't remember what it is. Yeah.
We're throw it out to the listeners. If you know what it is, pat yourself on the back and give the answer in the next show or Google it.
Good.
Are you telling me that you don't know?
I do know.
Oh. Well, that's not a competition, folks. You're not going to win anything for this.
No. Set my undying respect
and love.
Yeah.
How much is that worth? Yeah. We've got a couple of recommendations this week.
Yes.
Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun. I can't believe it's this time already.
Right, it's already, yeah.
It's kind of, whoa.
So
it's gone.
Who wants to go first with their first recommendation?
Well, I've got two. So shall I go first?
Yeah.
One of mine.
Yeah. You now, take either end, Tony.
Sorry, mate?
You take either end.
I'll take and a high five you over the top. So add that.
Oh, Eiffel Tower. Go on.
I went to the release party of a book this week, Out of Nothing, by Daniel Locke and David Blandy. Coming out of Nobrow, no surprise there, and it's got an introduction by Adam Rutherford. It's a absolutely cracking book, which is hundreds and hundreds. It's almost 300, but 250 pages long, and it's only $16.99 of a hardback book. Just as a little intro to this, I like... we're talking about what we like in writing and stuff, and I really like big ideas in comics. I think we all agree with that, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's some writers out there who do it really well. I think to have a big idea in a comic and run with it and extrapolate on it. I think there's a few out there that just seem to create a 6-issue miniseries off one single idea, or sometimes just a title. Do you know what I mean? There's a little bit that goes on every so often. Like A Man's Sock is Psychic. That's one I came up with earlier. Or A Naked Woman wakes up in bed with a shark. They're colours. They go away and run with those two. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
both winners there. But Out of Nothing, this book, it is a comic where ideas are the actual narrative. So the whole book is about ideas that have happened through history. I'll read you the blurb on the back. This is the story of us. From the Big Bang to an imagined future encompassing thousands of years of science and storytelling and art, so that we might know who we are. Locke and Blandy show how our unique dreaming minds and basic instinct to observe, record and connect has been the catalyst for all progress and discovery. It's in this incredible millennia-spanning graphic novel. And I make that very sort of well-written blurb. I make it right around that. It is. I went to the release party in East London this week and I had a chat with them. And they are both like... I love meeting creators who are like really excited about their ideas. Mm. Does that make sense? And these two guys, both artists, both writers, they talk about how the science and history of the world is a series of ideas, and how there is no difference in many ways between the nature of what is a beautiful thing in nature and in science and what is art. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And what they do is they start literally at the beginning, at the Big Bang, and there's this little blue girl, which seems strange, but they structure the story around this little blue girl who doesn't really say much, nothing much at all. And she sort of travels through history. So she starts up looking at how, you know, creation started and how creatures started evolving and how the world formed and all that sort of thing. And it skips almost 2 million years into the future, and she's wandering across a landscape, and it skips again till she's in a cave with a couple of guys, and they've got a horn from a beast, and they're saying this is the first time that art was created. And they're sitting in a cave alone at night, and, you know, huddling together for heat and warmth and eating together, and they're afraid of a lion that's going to attack. And they find a horn, which one of them creates into a little statue. And this is apparently the first evidence of art. There's some discussion about, is this art? You know, where did it come from? Why did it happen? And all this sort of thing. And the little blue character jumps through time. And there's little quotes. It's stuff like, these humans are no longer just scurrying across the surface. They are beginning to change it. And little things like that. And instinctively, and then through intellectualizing stuff, the world changes. And she's in Gutenberg's studio, you know, showing how the printing press started. And then she's with a couple of artists in Paris, chatting to them about the nature of art and all this sort of thing. And every so often, this little blue character, she gives a little bit of a shove. She just occasionally she'll say something, and you'll think, oh, okay, I get that now. And there's one, she's in a lab with someone, and I think it's something to do with nuclear science. I've got it quite in front of me. And she says, she just walks across the room, and she barely says anything, but she says, I think you need a 15mm lens for that. And she hands it to her. And you realize this little character is giving history a little nudge every so often. It's really beautifully told. And it's like reading a creative comic that has been done by a scientist in many ways, if that makes sense. And it shows the perpetuation of art and science, and that there isn't really a huge amount of difference between them. For example, is a molecule art? And I suppose in a way it is a beautiful thing, isn't it? Is a DNA strand art? You know, it kind of is a beautiful thing to look at. And then where does the difference lay? Really, really good stuff. I asked them about it, and I was chatting to them about the little blue girl, and I said, oh, and she's blue, and they sort of laughed. And they're saying, well, she's both the muse of creativity, but she's also the observer of it. And the book ends in the future. There's a little bit in the future where she's on Mars, and she's watching these two guys in sort of spacesuits survive a dust cloud, and then something happens, and you think, oh, and then everything sort of stops. Just for a microsecond. Really, really beautiful stuff. Once again, no brow. I think this is their last book of the year, the last release party of the year. This was parties are always good when there's free booze, aren't they? You know. And it's really, really beautiful stuff. I found it actually really inspiring to read. And occasionally I speak to a creator, and I find them like so sort of solidly interesting. You know, that it almost you're racing to keep up with them as they explain their ideas and they're exploring. Even when I was chatting to them, we were talking about, you know, ideas change the world and how exploring, you know, science and nature and our reality changes, and how examining stuff, if you examine the moment or you examine the molecule, or you examine something, you know, changes the world around us. And I sort of pointed out that, well, that's what we're doing here. And it was a really interesting little, they had a little exhibition of all the art and everything. And yeah, top guys. I think they went to university together. The two Daniels, and they've always talked about making comics together, and they were sort of university together reading comics and saying, oh, one day we'll do something, and this is what came of it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful art. It's a little bit sort of cartoony, a little bit iconic. Some of the panels are quite simple, and then suddenly the pages will just explode with star fields and planets and art and, you know, colors. And, you know, there's one bit where most of it is science, but there's one bit where the little blue girl, I don't know about people who mix records up together, but apparently there's a moment called the Get Down. Is that right? Does anyone know about that? Where the beat hits moment. And this little blue girl discovers it suddenly. She's in a sort of 1970s New York disco. And it's a really, really funny little moment. So it's done with a little bit of humor as well. But yeah, really good stuff. Out of Nothing, you can get it from Nobrow. The usual website, nobrow.net, applies. There you go. Smile.
Nice. Dan, what about you?
I picked up a copy of Transfer, issue 1, Wimbledon. I think I'm extremely late to the party,
I think everyone's got their coats and gone home, and I'm turning up.
We'll talk about this gentleman in a minute as well.
Yeah, they're tidying away the buffet at the party. So yes, it's done by written by Matt Garvey. The art is by Edda Messiah, and Matt actually does the colours and letters himself. I spoke to him at Wimbledon about his colouring, and he's taken a course by a previous guest, K. Michael Russell.
Oh, is he? Oh, good. He's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah. He's if you go onto his YouTube channel, there's an absolute wealth of videos and stuff, and he's put up a real few interesting ones of late, more interesting than they usually are. But he swapped from using the Wacom tablet to do his colouring, and he's now using an iPad Pro. And there's a whole video he's done. It's about 20 minutes long, of a comparison between the two and why he's made the jump from using one to the other. And the price wise, if you're looking for the Wacom to the iPad, I think there's the iPad comes in relatively cheaper, and there's a lot more functionality to it. So it's confusing, because I've been sort of geeing myself up to start drawing digitally, but I want something I could look around with me, and I thought, oh, it's going to have to be a Wacom, because I absolutely swear by them. But okay, now he's kind of thrown a spanner in the works, but saying, oh, the iPad Pro is the biz. So kind of back to square one. But anyway, back to the comic. So he runs a colouring course, and Matt's taken it. He's taken the first session, and I think he's working his way through the second one. And some of those skills are kind of translated over into doing the comic. So it's also got an absolutely fantastic cover by Dizavez.
Oh, I'm going to talk about her in a minute as well. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
She did. I got her to do the cover for Vanguard Book 2. She did an absolutely fantastic job.
I was putting the print of that away today in my little binder.
Dude. Nice one.
Yeah, very nice.
I sent on the cover concept she came up with for Book 2 to Vince and Tony, and they were absolutely amazing. I was just blown away by the kind of. She must have done about a dozen thumbnail sketches.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I was like, these are fantastic, but they're too high concept for what I need done. I just need like a stock superhero shot, but any one of them, the ideas she came up with, I would have gone with. And she's knocked it out of the park with the cover on Transfer One. So the story revolves around a courier, whose name's Steve, and he's transporting someone else's consciousness inside his brain. You can kind of think something like Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves film or the William Gibson book, and he delivers the consciousness to what he doesn't realize are a gang of ruthless criminals, and then it's kind of goes a bit awry for him. It's a nice little tale. It's a good setup. It feels very much like a kind of a TV show or a film. That, like we mentioned earlier in the episode, the pacing, it's really well done. I'd like to see where the story goes from here, because at the end there's a real massive cliffhanger, and yeah, it's an interesting one. And you can see where kind of Matt's current skills are going to be generally honest. It looks like he's taking the first steps here, but it's an absolutely solid job. And I can totally understand why writers are now looking, especially small press, are looking to kind of cover more bases by doing colouring and lettering. And Matt does both on this and does an admirable job. So there's a whole host of comics that Matt does, and I think he does really well. He's a real champion. And if you want to sell a comic, you can certainly take a few tips of how Matt does it at a con. Does a good job.
Cool.
So nice, nice work, Mike Garley.
More about Matt in a second. Mike Garley.
Just had to stick it in. Nice. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, my recommendation for this week is one, a webcomic that was sent through to us via the medium of a Facebook message that we got on the group.
Oh, nice.
And, so I clicked on the link and pretty much was amazed. This story is called A Ghost of the Gulag, which is written and illustrated by David Derrick Jr., based on a concept by Derrick Jr. and Joel Crawford. Now, David is he's a storyboard artist and works for like Disney's, worked on some big titles. I think he's currently working on the new Lion King film.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and the storyboard sort of artwork that really comes across in the artwork for the webcomic. But basically, the pit is basically set in a fictional sort of post World War II Russia, and it's all about an Amur tiger, I hope I'm saying that right. Who lives alone? Yeah. Basically, who lives alone in a forgotten prison camp in the Far East. Now, even though this is a story by an artist who's worked for Disney, this is a grown-up story. It's quite a grim and intense and dark story. But it's all about the animals, much like in the way Scurry is a dark tale.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can see that.
And the hero is basically a blind tiger who has like a friend who's a raven, and this character is unwittingly drawn into a larger conflict because it's all set around the tiger, that which is the Great Northern Forest of Russia, which the book talks about at the beginning, and there's a tribe of the wolf and the clan of the boar who are fighting for control of it, and this blind tiger basically gets caught up in it and caught up in the middle. Now that's kind of your basic synopsis, but a lot of that hasn't played out yet. I'm at 151 pages so far of this webcomic, and from the moment I started it, I could not stop reading it. It's so good, so good. Pretty much from the start, the prologue plays out a brutal confrontation between a pack of wolves and a group of wild boars. So there's 35 pages before, well, probably more than that, probably about 40, 50 pages before you even get this main character introduced to it. And in this prologue, there's some awesome moments. It's pretty hard hitting. You know, characters get messed up quite seriously. And moment where a character hides inside the carcass of a moose, which is it's pretty nail biting tension, and it does lead to an amazing entrail laden splash page, which is literally, it bursts from the page. That's all I'll say. And just from those initial moments, I was blown away from the storytelling, because it is pretty, you know, it is intense. It's like a thriller, and you really get caught up in it. So the story already had its hooks in me before the main star of the tale was even in it. You definitely see, you know, the artwork has a loose sort of style, very much like the, you know, storyboard art that you've probably seen in making ofs and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's still got such a professional polish to it, and the animals are just done amazingly. From the wolves, you know, everything across the board. As someone who would love to be able to draw animals like this, I look at it and there seems to be an effortlessness to the flow of, like, for instance, how, like, I don't know, a 250-pound tiger would move. You know,
I read the first bit with the fight with the wolves, and are they warthogs or something? Are they boars?
Huge boars. Yeah,
yeah. I read that yesterday after you sent it through, and I thought, yeah, that's really good. I really like the wolf characters; it's really good, and it's got like a flow to it, isn't it? Definitely.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah, a good battle.
Yeah, yeah. There's a real quite cinematic. And it doesn't hold back. And of course, then that eventually leads to a chase. Which we eventually get the spectacular introduction of the main character, who's known as One Eye. In this world, they call him the Shadow Walker, who's a massive blind tiger, who is, I'm guessing, is essentially the ghost of the Gulag, because he does live in this basically deserted prison surrounded by bones, and, you know, he's got a huge scar. There's like a, you know, the hammer and sickle.
Yeah.
He's got, one of his eyes is gone, and it's sort of, there's a scar there that's in the shape of that, like it's been burned. And he's blind in the other eye. So this is a blind tiger, who's bitter, angry, and terrifying in his own way, but immediately fascinating, a massive badass. But he goes around with a raven who essentially acts as his eyes. So when he has these fights, the raven will fly in and scratch something, and the tiger can smell the blood and know where the bad guy is. And the raven's the only character whose dialogue isn't written in English. Like, everyone else has like speech bubbles and dialogue, but with the raven, it's just sound effects, and, you know, which lends some nice moments of levity and drama, because obviously it's just characters reacting to whatever this thing is like cawing about. Just great characters, and I just loved it. I devoured it. I'm on for the long haul now.
Is there a print version of it at all?
I don't think there is. This it very much seems to me like, you know, this is someone who just wanted to tell this story. Like, the webcomic page is sort of fairly simple setup. You got your webcomic, There's not lots of ads. You know, it's webcomic, you've got the about. I'd love to see this collected at some point. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
I'm guessing there's there has to be an end story in sight. But like I say, 150 pages in, and we're just really getting to the meat of the story. You know, that David's not afraid to spend time on like really intense action scenes. Because also in some ways, because of a webcomic, you've got that freedom, haven't you, to pace out an action scene. And there's wonderful moments. I mean, when basically the one eye appears, there's a couple of splash pages, you know, that in a print comic, that's real estate, that's, you know, that's gold mines. But he's used it in this webcomic in the best possible way, because you're just looking at his beautiful work of these animals. You know, the animals look beautiful. If there was one minor criticism I would say is maybe that the lettering is quite sort of simple. You know, a little rough around the edges with some of the lettering.
Okay. But, yeah, I got that a little bit, mate. I'll make you right on that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's more probably because I think David's essentially doing it all himself. And if he's doing it all himself, as you know, as well as like a full-time job doing this, that, and the other,
Who's to criticise him? Look, he's putting it out. Yeah. I know what you mean. I've only read the start of it, and I looked at the lettering, and I thought that's the sort of lettering you often see at the start of a webcomic that will improve very soon.
Yeah,
because you learn as you go along, don't you?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But that's the only thing I could say about it, because I absolutely love this story. This is this is going to be in one of my best of lists, I think. You know, it was such a... I knew nothing about it, so it just came out of the blue. Yeah. So thank you very much, David, for getting in touch on the Facebook and sending this through to us, because I absolutely love it and I'm going to champion it. And if you want a nice webcomic to read that's pretty grim, action-packed, but captivating, then you definitely want to get Ghost of the Gulag, which is ghostofthegulag.com.
Cool.
See what I'm talking about.
I have to check that one out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
Speaking of webcomics, dude, the page you put out the other day was fucking ace, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice.
Mate, cheers, fucking thanks. Hell.
Yeah.
You put so much into a page, dude. I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that character with the visor that has like the sort of LED, you know, the sort of target thing hovering in front of his face. I love that character.
It's kind of like a big eye that you can sort of... Yeah. Yes. I almost forgot it. I went to upload that page and I was like, that's not right. And I was like, oh, fuck. I haven't put it on there.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself. Yes. Now, you've got another one as well, Tony. Just a quick one that you wanted to...
Yeah, just a quick one. Here on Matt Garvey, the podcast, I read White Noir this week. Have you read it yet, guys? Or
I haven't read it properly, but
no,
I've marvelled at it.
I must have missed this. Did it come in on an email?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, on a Dropbox link. I messaged Matt. What day was it? Thursday morning. I try and get a lot of my writing done, as you'll know, in the morning. And I messaged him at some mad time in the morning, saying, "Oh, can send us a high res scanner the front page, so I want to do a little review on it of the cover." And he said, "I'm just on my way to the train station to travel up north. Is it all right if I send it to you on Sunday?" And I said, "Yeah, no problem at all. But what one are you going to?" And it turned out we were both sitting at the same train station. So I ended up spending a good hour with Matt having a chat. I like Matt. Do you know what I mean? He's a good guy. He's hardworking. He loves comics. He likes talking about comics. And we had a great time. And I have to say, credit to him. I think this is one of the best things he's done. I really do. Nice. I think he's found an artist who I think he gets on very well with. Because for those that don't know, the art is by Dizeves. Is that Ina say her name? I don't know.
Dizeves? I don't know.
Yeah, who I think is an American lady, as I understand
it. She is, yeah.
And
yeah.
I will say this is next level shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she fucking killed it on the previous one, Ether.
Yeah. I think it's still going. I think that there's going to be another issue of that, and there's certainly going to hopefully be another issue of this. It walks into that Brubaker, Sean Phillips area of thrillers.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that. It's got that feel to it. Very briefly, I'll do the setup. I don't want to do the whole story, but a man crashes, and there is it's either a stag or an elk or something is sticking in his windscreen as he comes to, surrounded by a sort of snowy America, you know, or Canada, out in, you know, the middle of nowhere. And he climbs up to the top to the road, and he's got a bit of blood on his face, sort of thing. And he decides he's going to walk in one direction. And the snowy bits are my favourite bits, I think. I was chatting to him about it one point, is he walks along this icy road and you really feel the cold, you know, you really feel it in this with all the snow coming down. And there's a bit where he suddenly, he comes across the sign that says, "Welcome to Essex Peak," which is the town he's just about to, you know, walk into to save his life. And as he does, it's a shot from the floor upwards. And it basically shows the sky is all red as a little sort of, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of red coming up. You know, it's almost like that.
Yeah,
you know, a little bit of a call forward to what's going to happen. Really beautiful moments in the snow, I have to say. Real sort of Fargo type snow scenes, if anyone remembers the movie Fargo, not the series. Yeah. And he walks into town, and there's a bar. There's a sort of redneck, tartan shirt wearing kind of bar thing going on, and he collapses in there. And I won't ruin the rest of the story, because it's certainly, as the title suggests, it follows the rules of noir. You know, it really does. And that's, I know it's something we talked about with Ricardo Moe back in our crime special episode. But yeah, it really follows it. It's skillfully done. No one's a good guy. No one's a bad guy. There's a cop who turned up. You're still not sure about him. He looks like a little bit like Hare Star from Preacher for a couple of moments. And then it goes into a flashback, which I won't ruin. I think if I had one niggle with it, I think the flashback doesn't work as well. I'm not an artist, so I don't understand computer modeling, but I think it's done in black and white, and Dizeves has pared down the art a little bit, and I think there's a couple of panels that show it. It's a little bit, I don't know whether she does use the sort of poser program, but it smells a little bit like that. It still works. It's still great. The ingenue in it, the female character, is sort of white, sort of blonde haired female character, is so striking in it. She works so well, and Dizeves uses that red palette just at the odd occasion to highlight certain moments, which you'll discover if you read it. And then the mystery only gets more and more by the end of it. It's got a great ending, a really good ending. The art, she really excels in that last panel with the art of the character's face and how he's feeling.
Yeah,
really well done. Matt doesn't overwrite it. He allows his whole pages that don't have writing in them, and he lets it breathe. And I can see how his writing has really, really gone for it in this one. He's really worked hard on it, and it's got one of the best covers. I think one of the best covers you'll see in indie comics for a long time.
Yeah,
which is it's a sort of, you know, it's like a snow angel.
It's a gruesome snow angel, basically.
Yes, it's like the blood is mixed in with where the movement of the arms and legs is going.
Yeah,
in
that's great, that picture.
And the face is sort of skull-like. Yeah, really, really good stuff. Yeah, if you go to mattgarvey.co.uk, there you go, nice. Matt.
Yeah. Nice.
Very good.
Another tiny one for me is I caught up on a series that I talked about way back near when we started the show, I think. It was a book called Silver by Stephen Frank, Dark Planet Comics. I know he's done a couple of collections of this, but I caught up with issues 8 and 9 on Comixology. I love this series. It's basically, it's like Ocean's 11 meets Dracula. Well, quite literally.
Awesome.
Because it is a group of people in the 1920s trying to steal from Dracula's castle during a huge vampire banquet kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like that idea.
And they're trying to steal the silver, the titled Silver, from the castle. So and issue 8 and 9 is just, you know, those wonderful moments of those kind of heist films when the con really switches into gear and things begin to be revealed and you're like, yes, brilliant. You know when it seems like the good guys aren't doing so well, but then it's like takes a turn. And this is, I mean, there was already like 7 issues of brilliant lead up and character moments, because there's really a ragtag motley crew who are basically doing this. But it's just great stuff, black and white, very visual. I think Stephen works in movies and stuff as well, I believe. I love it. I think more people should dig it out. I know I got the printed copies of volume 1 and 2. So they release them like 3-issue sort of volumes from Kickstarter a while ago, and I know he did a recent Kickstarter for the 3rd volume, but it was one of those I wanted to do it, but the postage I couldn't.
Yeah,
I couldn't afford it. It was like something happened in between. Maybe he had a learning from his past Kickstarter that, like, he realised that the postage has to be more. So unfortunately, I couldn't get a third volume. I want to get it in one day. But I love
it. Yeah, that's great. It's bad like that sometimes. I look at some of the Kickstarters out of the States and stuff, and I think, oh, I really want that. But
yeah.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. No, seriously though, if you want a good heist tale with some cracking sort of con men sort of characters, then check out Silver. I mean, I've read it all on Comixology, and I double dipped for the print when I could. So there you go. Nice. You check that out now. It's got 9 issues in total so far as well, which is brilliant. Mm. So there you go. There's lots of comics this week for people to check out.
Yeah.
And you've listened to us talk about a load of nonsense for 2 hours. I knew the time was just going to fly this week. As soon as you get us talking about The Punisher, that's it.
Stuff we love. Yeah. We'll go on.
And if you want to punish us via email, then you can send out.
I've been watching. My son really loves Lucifer, so I've been watching it recently, trying to catch up so we can have a chat about it. And it's literally like David Walliams is playing the devil.
Yeah, what's wanders around going,
what's I don't know.
He goes,
pretty weird. He goes, I like two ladies at once. It's like this, literally like that.
You're like, you know those things will kill you.
I actually don't mind it. I actually quite enjoy it. But
there's something weirdly captivating about it.
There is, yeah. I'm having trouble getting the Kenneth Williams out of my head when I'm watching it.
What do you think?
He's channeling a little bit of that.
Yes, like that. Oh, he's been shot. Look at those boobs. You know, it's like that.
Missing the swanny whistle. That fucking make it.
Titter ye not.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes me want to watch it more.
With the look at camera, raise my eyebrows.
That would be so good. Oh dear.
I watched a couple episodes at Riverdale.
That's like Twin Peaks for teenagers.
Yeah, well, my wife watched it and along for the ride, and I mentioned it. Someone at work said, I used to read Archie comics when I was a kid. What's it like? And I said, well, the original Archie comics was all about who you're going to go to the burger stand with and have a milkshake. This is more like who you're going to have anal sex with in the car park.
It really is.
Yeah.
This takes working at Bumley's to a whole new level.
And she says, I said, it's probably not one for you, because I knew the sensibilities of the person I was talking to.
Okay. Yeah. So. I actually don't think it's bad. It's actually quite well shot and stuff, isn't it? And it's just bizarre, because people pop up in it and you think, oh, I remember you from such and such series and stuff like that. And it's all right.
Oh, yeah, really? I'm not hating it, so that's something.
Yeah, same with me. It's one of those times I get back and watch some more of it, yeah.
I tell you what, that's a Dan Butcher recommendation, isn't it? I'm not hating it. Yeah. He's gone for the pool quote there, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's done.
Yeah, Dan Butcher does not hate this TV series.
Oh, dear. We hope you enjoyed our brand of ranting this week, folks. Let us know what you think. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Send your competition entries, no matter what they may be.
Please do. We'd love to see them. I'm really looking forward to this.
Send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You've heard that twice because Tony remembered it earlier.
Hey, me grown up.
Yeah, and if you haven't already, you can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we've got a guest on next week. It's going to be a very interesting chat. So we'll probably put up a poll and some questions or whatever.
Yeah.
And let definitely. You know who it is midweek. I almost went a bit loose for that. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join our group Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook, which we're still trying to whittle down the sales pitches.
This week was particularly bad.
We're all up for people promoting and into promoting their books or whatever, but sometimes we've had people asking to post something when they, not only that, they haven't even listened to the show.
Yeah, they haven't read. There's a pinned post which explains what you can post. It's a discussion group. That's all it needs to be said. It's a discussion group. Yeah,
I feel like we're preaching to the choir here, because I don't think the people want to hear.
Yeah,
can be frustrating.
Yeah, you there listening. You're a good egg. You're all right.
Yeah.
You're all right.
We love you.
We know our listeners wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they listen to us on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com, or they listen to us on iTunes, maybe. Oh! Oh! Yeah. Bisto.
I do have a Swanee whistle somewhere. I can't put my hand to that right now.
Do we need to explain that for the American listeners?
We'll just leave it at that. I think with the extra bit post credits.
Yeah. It's all going to make sense. yes, if you listen to us, no matter where you heard us, whether it's Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, or what other networks have we got this week, Tony?
Bisto.
The Bisto Network. Then please leave us a review. Help get the word out about the show. We need it. We just need everything, really.
We're needy.
We do a comic book podcast. We're desperate.
Please love us.
We choose to spend an evening sat alone in the dark talking
for 3 hours.
Yeah, talking to another two men. Anyway, but where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Twitter, SOESEZOHYZ. Or if you go to neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. And if you look at it this week, I shall be once again promoting mine and Nick Prolix's Cockney Kung Fu Mailer. Have a look at Twitter, go to it, tinyletter.com. Is it Tiny Letter? Fucking hell, I can't remember now. But anyway, go there. Yeah. And have a look on our Twitter, and it comes out regularly every Wednesday, and we're putting a lot of effort into it, and there's a lot of good essays on there, and there's little sort of tutorials from Nick about some of the art he's talked about and stuff like that. Yeah, good stuff. But have a look at that.
Nick is fucking destroying it on if you're on Instagram. His artwork. Just keeps on getting. There's a dance scene he did. It's like, fucking hell, Nick. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good stuff. It's like a kind of 1940s, 50s dance club, and everyone's kind of like jiving away.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
Really good.
Yeah. Like a jazz club thing. Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm very. I actually genuinely one of these writers who thinks, right, I'm really lucky to have Nick on board for this project. Yeah. I don't think I'll keep him because he'll get snapped up.
Yeah,
you know.
I think you're right to kind of what his. He hasn't got any weaknesses, but right to those kind of strengths of what he likes doing.
Yeah,
illustrate really well.
He often sends me books. Have a look at this. Have a look at this. And there's a lot of European influences in his work, and I always look at them and think that's really, really good. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Speaking of really good, where can people find you online, Dan?
Oh, thank you. I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com. It's kind of getting to a real high point in the story at the moment, so it's worth jumping on. Lots of action
stuff
to follow.
Get stuck in.
Thank you.
You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, where I'm a little bit more ranty at the moment. I don't know why. I'm a little bit spicy. Don't know why.
Yeah, it's been a bit of that I've seen. It's good though.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Dan.
Like a bit of passion, don't we?
Yeah.
Are you saying I'm sometimes passionless?
You're a very passionate individual, as I've experienced. Yeah.
Man of fiery passions.
Yeah. Wet, dirty, splashy passions.
Oh, splashy passions. I'm calling shotgun on that for a band name. you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com, and you can also order Devil Kickers, the prose novel by myself and Daniel Mark Chant on Amazon. So there you go. Cool. Thank you very much, folks. It's been a fun one this week.
Yeah. I really enjoy the three-man shows.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, three ways. I love them.
Love a three-way. always with these gents. Wonderful.
And always free. You never have to pay for a three-way with us.
Well, you never have to pay for this show. So
no, you don't.
Yeah, you know.
Very true.
Yeah.
And thanks for the new listeners. We got a bit of a bump this week, didn't we, in downloads, which we're quite pleased about.
Yeah.
So thanks to anyone who's listening. It may be that I don't know why you've suddenly took that jump, but it might be that you met us at Wimbledon or wherever you met us. But thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate it. And if you have got anything to talk about, then please go to Facebook or email us, because we'd be very interested to hear what you think.
We appreciate all our listeners, old, new, because a lot of them catch up as well. So
definitely. Yeah,
catching up now. It's good to have you back.
Yeah.
Oh god, it's too late. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. From Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. I don't know, you're probably going to go to the movies and see some comic book thing, or stay indoors and watch a comic book thing, but whatever you do. Also read some comics,
please. Do always read comics.
Comic House.
Nicely done. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
remember years ago going out with a girl. What's that girl magazine? Used to be More or something. And there was like a the problems page at the back, which are obviously made up or just completely ridiculous. And there was a girl writing in saying, like, when she used to have sex with her boyfriend, when he ejaculated, he always went, ah, Bisto. And that fucking kept me laughing for days.